We'll see.
We can get it done in half an hour. No, we have to. Appeal to Caesar. Title of this chapter, I gave it, was Defense Before Rulers and Kings. That's what you'll have in this chapter. You'll have Paul giving his apologetic, if you heard that word before, that's the word that he uses, or that he uses here in Acts, his defense before rulers and kings. It sets the stage for Paul to give his testimony not only to rulers and kings, but to Nero himself. We don't know much about that in the end. But we know that God is leading Paul to Rome because the Lord said that he would be a witness to kings, to rulers, and he does faithfully. So let's look at the chapter. First, let's look at Paul before Festus in verses 1 through 12. Festus is this new governor who has been has taken place, his place already. And remember in chapter 24, Felix, the previous governor, had left Paul in prison for 2 years. So realize that as this chapter opens up, 2 years have passed and Paul is in jail for those 2 years. Now you would think in 2 years things have mellowed down, Paul is no longer such a threat, but it's not the case. Verse 1. 3 days after Festus arrived in the province, he went up to Jerusalem from Caesarea. Caesarea was the place where he would stay and do all his administrative duties. So he's going to Jerusalem. Then the chief priests and the leaders of the Jews presented their case against Paul to him, and they appealed, asking him to do them a favor against Paul, that he might summon him to Jerusalem. They were preparing to an ambush along the road to kill him. However, Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea and that he himself was about to go there shortly. Therefore, he said, let the men of authority among you go down with me and accuse him if there is any wrong in this man. When he had spent not more than 8 or 10 days among them, he went down to Caesarea. The next day, seated at a judge's bench, he commanded Paul to be brought in. When he arrived, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood around him and brought many serious charges that they were not able to prove. While Paul made the defense that neither against the Jewish law, nor against the temple, nor against Caesar have I sinned at all. Then Festus, wanting to do a favor for the Jews, replied to Paul, are you willing to go up to Jerusalem, there to be tried before me on these charges? But Paul said, I am standing at Caesar's tribunal, where I ought to be tried. I have done no wrong to the Jews, as even you can see very well. If then I am doing wrong or have done anything deserving of death, I do not refuse to die. But if there is nothing to what these men accuse me of, no one can give me up to them. I appeal to Caesar. After Festus conferred with his council, he replied, you have appealed to Caesar. To Caesar you will go. So here's Paul before Festus. Now, the first few verses, verses 1 through 5, happen in Jerusalem, right? So Festus comes to Jerusalem. So what happens as he comes to Jerusalem? What's the first thing he gets? Yeah, he's approached by the Jews, right? The religious leaders. Now, these are specific Jews, right, who want to accuse Paul. Now, again, 2 years have passed. You would think things have mellowed down, but that's not the case, right? And only Festus has only been a procurator of this area for a few years. And the first item that he's presented is Paul. And what is their intent, though, as they come and accuse Paul of all these things? What is their intent? Nothing new, right? What do they want to do? Ambush and kill him. Has this plot been done before? Yes, it failed, right? They tried this before. It didn't work with Lysias, the commander, right? Now they're trying. They want to try it again. Man, these guys are relentless, right? And notice that they actually approach him and say what? In verse 3. Asking him what?
A favor.
A favor. Now, this during this day, that day and age, there was the politics going on. Not new today either. But they were doing each other favors so that, you know, hey, you do us a favor, we'll support you. That's the way it worked. If you don't give us a favor, then, you know, we're not going to work with you. So, again, they're always looking for that for that opportunity. Now, the word for favor there is interesting because it comes from the word grace, charis. We use the same for gift. So if you can give us, you know, some grace here, if you can give us, do us this favor, special favor. Now, why this word is important, you'll notice a little further on, Paul throws that word back at them. The word charis means grace, gift. And so Paul will throw this word back at them. Paul will get the hint what's happening here. Do us this favor, give us Paul, and we'll try him, basically. That's what they're saying to him. But is that the truth? No. They don't even want to try him. They want to bring him in, and they want to execute a plan of ambush, right, and kill him. Now, it's not going to work, right? Didn't work the first time, not going to work either. But they're relentless to kill Paul. Verses 4 and 5, what's Festus' response? Now, he's new at this. He's just beginning. He gets a mouthful, right? People are telling him, give us Paul. He says, no, it's not going to happen. But what does Festus say? Verses 4 and 5, answer that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, right? I'm going there to Caesarea, which is the place that he normally dwells. Now, he says, those of you who have something, those important men, men of authority, you have something and you think there's something wrong that he's done, come with me. And so basically he says no to them. Now, again, is God's sovereignty at work here? It is, right? Because Festus could have said yes. All right, let's do this. Let's take care of this. No. God is in control, and Paul's not going to be dealt with in Jerusalem. And we know why. If he's left in Jerusalem to be judged by the Jewish leaders, what's going to happen? They're going to kill him. They have no intent of doing a fair and just trial. They really just want to get Paul and get rid of him, right? So, but God in his sovereignty does not allow man's intent. He will accomplish his will in spite of the intent of evil desires by men. And God protects Paul here as we see it clearly. Now, verse 6 through 12. Now the scene switches from Jerusalem to Caesarea, right? Verse 6 to 12. And then after more than 8 days or 10 days, they go down to Caesarea. And what happens there? So there are a group of religious leaders that actually go down to Caesarea with him. Verse 6 to 7, we have the Jews' accusation, right? Now notice it says that he was that Festus was seated at the judge's bench. They used to have a bench. Like today, the judges have a bench. It's kind of high up there. Well, it was high up there. There was a wall protecting it. Also, so people wouldn't jump and try to get the judge, obviously. It's pretty long. They sat there. That's called the Bema seat. You know where we are going to stand someday as believers? Before the Bema seat. That's what Paul uses the same. He's looking at this. Oh, the same thing he's used. The Roman emperors used this to judge people. He says, Christ is going to have that for us. Someday we're all going to be before the judgment seat of Christ. That's the Bema seat. That's the tribunal where we're going to be before. Now, not to be judged for salvation, but according to our works. Now, we listened to Pastor Ron today talk about gifts, right? Well, God has given us gifts. Now, what we do with those gifts, we're responsible to God for that. So if we are like that foolish servant who does what he gets a gift, right? And what does he do with this gift? His money, right? Puts it in a little hole. Oh, my master is just such a strict man. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to hide it, protect it here. I'm going to keep it. He does nothing with it. And then the other people who get some of it, they invest it. They use it, right? And who gets rewarded? Those faithful stewards, right, that took those gifts and invested it. They didn't keep it to themselves. They were rewarded. So when we are before Christ, it will be manifest how we use our gift. And I think that should be a motivating factor for us. Are we using our gifts? Because if we're not, then are we willing to tell the Lord, Lord, I don't know. I didn't know I had gifts. Well, there's no excuse for Pastor Ron. So we all have gifts, right? And the Bible says that. But what are we going to say? Right? So the gifts are important in the body. We need to use what God has given us to be used. Now, it's totally unrelated to what we're talking about, but I thought it was cool that Paul uses the same analogy here of the judgment seat where he's before to the judgment seat of Christ where we're all going to be standing before one day. Now, I tell you, I don't look forward to it just now because I don't feel like I've done much for the Lord. And so I'm like, how much have I wasted in years? And sometimes I think, oh, I've wasted time. And I think we've all wasted to some degree. But the question is, how faithful are we with what God has given us? And even from Paul, we can learn that he was faithful, right, in using those times, even the times when he was in prison, to proclaim the Lord's name. So the Jews' accusation, he's in front of that bema, Festus sits down, and he asked Paul to be brought in verses 6 and 7. And what do they say? They stood around him and brought many serious charges that they were not able to prove. So again, what is this? Just accusations, right? After 2 years, who's around as a witness? They didn't do it the first time. They don't have him anymore. They don't have any of those people that supposedly saw Paul desecrate the temple and so on. What's Paul's defense in verse 8? What does he say? Paul gave his apologia, his defense. What did he say? Neither against the Jewish law, right? Nor against the temple. Nor against Caesar have I sinned at all. I like that. I don't know what your version says. But you know the word for sin? It's the same word. The word for sin is the same word for sin. I was going to say. What's the word that you have there? Done wrong, right? Hamartia. It's the word. It's missing the mark. That's the same word Paul uses for sin. So notice that Paul doesn't say wrong. I've done anything. He's connecting anything wrong to morality, right? Sinned. If I done anything wrong, then I want to know. If I done something that's sin, I want to know. You know, because a lot of times what is illegal, it's what? Sinful, right? At least in that time, there's a lot of things that were legal, were sinful. Nowadays, you can't say that. You realize now think some of the things that are legal now are sinful. And so as believers, we need to look at things from the morality perspective, right? Is it right before God? Is it, Paul is looking at it, if I've done anything wrong, I want to know. If I want to done anything sinful, I want to know. And I think as believer, we need to see that there are some things that, we need to see everything from that perspective, whether they're sinful or not. What's one example of something that's legal that's a sin?
Abortion.
Abortion is a sin. I mean, there's no question in my mind. I was reading Psalm 139 today, and it just spoke to me right away. It says, the Lord says that he saw me when I was still an embryo, and he formed my inner parts. He weaved my inner parts. He made him, and all my days were numbered, he said. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? I ask my little daughter all the time, and I say, I said that she was made by something, and she said, no. I said, you're made, because everything's made in China. I said, you're made in China. She said, no, I'm not made in China. I'm made in heaven, and I was weaved in heaven. Because I've taught her that word, that God weaved you inside, you know, your mother's womb. He weaved you. So she knows that. She always gives me that theological answer. But that's cool. I think it's cool. But that's exactly what happens, right? There are some things that are legal nowadays, but they're a sin. And it's interesting because I was just reading about a new poll that most Americans nowadays believe that abortion is okay. I just read it. So, I mean, it begs a question, right? Why? Well, a lot of it is, you know, it's influence. The world has a powerful influence. Now, if you don't think it has a powerful influence, tell me if this is not the case with homosexuality as well. Why is a sin, it's a sin nowadays, as even by Christians, as it's okay. They can get married. There's nothing wrong with that. Right? Whereas maybe 2 years ago, you ask somebody, would say, well, no, it's not right. But what happens is, right, things that are legal tend to start moving a different direction with immorality. Now, the Bible knows what it tells what sin is, and Paul does not evade that. He says, if I've done anything sinful, I want to know. And Paul presents himself like that. Verse 9. What's Festus' question in verse 9? Festus wanting to do a favor. Again, it's the same word. Charis, grace, gift for the Jews, replied to Paul. Are you willing to go up to Jerusalem to be tried before me on these charges? What he's saying, we're not clear. Is he saying, let's go and I'll judge you? They'll throw their accusations and I'll judge you, or I'll let you go with them. We don't know exactly, but he's really trying to please the Jews and is asking them if, he's asking Paul, okay, Paul, I'll let you decide this. Do you want to go back to Jerusalem and be tried by me there? Paul knows this, right? He's not going to get a fair trial in Jerusalem. What's Paul's response, verse 10?
I am
He says, yeah, I'm standing at Caesar's tribunal right now. This is where Caesar tries, right? The Roman government tries people. I've done no wrong to the Jews, as you can see very well. And he says in verse 11, I haven't done anything deserving death. Notice Paul, what Paul says. I do not refuse to die. But if there's anything, there's nothing that these men accuse me of, no one can give me up to them. I appeal to Caesar. Paul says, if I've done anything worthy of death, I will not run away from it. Isn't that what an upright Christian would do? Right? He would say, hey, if I've done something, then I'll pay the price. We don't run from the consequences. If we've done wrong, if you sin, we have to deal with the consequences. Paul says, if that's the case, I'm not afraid of dying. But in the last, notice the last phrase there? No one can give me up. What does your version say? No one has the right to hand me over. Anything else? It's the same words for grace. No one can give me as a present to them. So he picked it up. Paul picked it up that these Festus wanted to give him as a little gift to the Jews. Paul says, no, it's not going to happen. You're not going to give me as a gift to the Jews or as a favor to them. I appeal to Caesar. I want to go to Rome and be judged there. So Paul's pretty smart. He knows what's happening. He knows that the Jews want to kill him. But he also knows that God's leading him to Rome to proclaim his name. Now, you notice that Paul could have said something else? Does he have had any other choice? He could have said, what? Appeal to innocence and say, hey, set me free, right? Do you hear Paul asking to be set free in anywhere so far? No. He knows where he's going, right? He knows where God is leading him. And he knows that freedom is not his focus right now. Because the Lord is leading his steps to Rome where he's going to proclaim his name. He knows that he is to be right now where he should be. And he's not seeking freedom. That's not what he's seeking. You're going to say something, Jack.
Well, also, he doesn't want to be at a hearing in Jerusalem and have Festus say, okay, you're released. I don't find any charges against you. I'll turn. This is a religious matter with you and the Jews. I'll turn you over to them. Well, because he knows that's
right.
That's not a good solution.
Right, and again, that's a great point to what we're saying now. Paul is not seeking his freedom. He's not. He could go there and say, "Oh, this guy can release me over there in Jerusalem." That's not what Paul's seeking. Right? He's seeking for God's guidance because he knows he's going to Rome. He is so set to going because he knows that's God's plan.
So the consequences if he appeals to Caesar is he's protected by the Romans to get him to Rome.
Right. Also, there's also a there might be some consequence if he appeals to Caesar. What will that be? There's a danger. Why? Yes, if he goes to Caesar and Caesar doesn't like this thing, he can immediately kill you, right? This is a risk Paul is taking, but again, what's motivating Paul? Right, the Lord's guiding him. He knows, right? In Acts chapter 23, verse 11, this is what he says. The following night, the Lord stood by him and said, have courage, for as you have testified about me in Jerusalem, so you must also testify in Rome. Paul knew the Lord himself told him, you're going to testify about me in Rome. You're going there. And so that's motivating. Paul, in his thinking, right, and you're trying to get in Paul's thinking, he's not thinking how we often think, right, in our own human terms. I'm in jail, poor me. I got to be free. No. What is he thinking? Everything is about the gospel, everything about what the Lord is calling me to do, and I want to focus on that. And it doesn't matter the cost. He says, even if I've done something wrong, okay, then go ahead. I'm not worried about dying. In fact, he dies for the Lord. But he is motivated by his view of what God wants to do in his life, and God has shown him that he will do. So what is Festus' decision in verse 12? Yeah, he says he conferred with his council. He's got a group of people. This is what's customary. Now, this is tricky. He needs to do this because If he sets him free and he's guilty, he's in trouble. But again, if he holds him up and the charges are not real or not bogus and he sends him to Rome, he's in trouble too. He gets in trouble with the emperor. So he is at a very difficult situation as well. So he had to make sure that his request was merited. Now, verses 13 to 27, let's do the second half. So now we've looked at the first half of this chapter, which is Paul before Festus. Now we're going to see the second part here, Paul before King Agrippa. All right, verses 13 to 22, we find Festus privately presents the case to King Agrippa. Let's read those. After some days had passed, King Agrippa the second, he's called King Agrippa the second, and Bernice arrived in Caesarea and paid courtesy, called him Festus. Now this guy, Agrippa, was pro-Roman. He was actually the great-grandson of Herod the Great, who killed all the babies back in Matthew chapter 2. He is also the son of Agrippa I, who had murdered James. And he comes with his sister and paying a courtesy call to the new procurator. Now, that's customary. We're accusing him of incest because he lived with his sister. We don't know exactly, but that was what he was accused of. Believable? Perhaps. So this is the man that just is going to pay a courtesy call on Festus. Since they stay there many days, Festus presented Paul's case to the king, saying, there's a man who was left as a prisoner by Felix. Now, when we read this, pay attention how Festus presents it to King Agrippa, okay? Notice the things he says and think, is he saying truthful things or what is he saying? Since they stay there many days, Festus presented Paul's case to the king, saying, there is a man who was left as a prisoner by Felix. When I was in Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews presented their case and asked for a judgment against him. I answered them that it's not the Romans' custom to give any man up before the accused confronts the accusers face to face and has an opportunity to give a defense concerning the charges. Therefore, when they had assembled here, I did not delay. The next day, I sat at the judge's bench and ordered the man to be brought in. Concerning him, the accusers stood up and brought no charge of the sort I was expecting. Instead, they had some disagreements with him about their own religion and about a certain Jesus, a dead man Paul claimed to be alive. Since I was at a loss in a dispute over such things, I asked him if he wished to go to Jerusalem and be tried there concerning these matters. But when Paul appealed to be held for trial by the emperor, I ordered him to be kept in custody until I could send him to Caesar. Then Agrippa said to Festus, I would like to hear the man myself. Tomorrow you will hear him, he replied. Now, the report given by Festus to King Agrippa, is it all truthful? No. Five things he says, okay? First, verse 14, he was left by Felix. He's pretty much blaming Felix. Hey, it wasn't me. He left him. Okay? Shift the blame. Number two, verse 15 and 16, he says, he presents himself as a man upholding Roman law. He says, hey, I did everything according to the law. The guy has done anything wrong, but who wants to give him as a favor? Festus. So does he really want to uphold the law? Not really. But he says, hey, King Agrippa, I uphold Roman law. Number three, verse 17, he shows himself to be expedient in the case. In other words, he doesn't waste any time. Let's get through this case and solve it. Is that his take? Not really. The fact of the matter is he doesn't deal it quickly enough, right? They're not in a hurry, but he shows himself to be an expedient man. He wastes no time. Number four, verses 18 and 19, he shows himself to be a good judge. He agrees that Paul's done no crime, right? Showing that the Jews are incompetent on judging a man because there are no charges. Except that they disagree with Paul on these religious matters, right? Now, does that show that he is actually a good judge? No, because if Paul is not guilty, then why is Paul still in jail? So he's not a good judge. He could have dismissed the case. He didn't. Now, notice also verses 18 and 19. What he does accurately say is what the dispute is about, which is very important here. What does verse 19 says? What's the dispute about? Yes, but specifically, what are the specifics there?
Certain points of dispute.
Over?
Religion.
Over? I'm still pushing. Yes, it's over about this man, Jesus, who Paul claims
he's alive.
Isn't that interesting that this man could actually pick up what the gospel is? That is the gospel. In fact, next week, Pastor Ron will be preaching on the resurrection. The resurrection is the basis of our faith in Christ. With no resurrection, Christ isn't rise from the dead. We are dead in our own sins. Right? So that is the focus point. Paul's focus point is always Jesus is the Messiah. He is the resurrected Messiah sent by God to save us. And we know that Festus knows this. He knows he's got that right. It is about that. He shows himself as a good judge. Number five, he shows himself to be a man of good reason and disposition. Verses 20 and 21. See, I was at a loss in dispute. I'm excited really, over such things. I ask him if he wished to go to Jerusalem and be tried there concerning these matters. But Paul, since he appealed, right, to the emperor, I ordered him to be kept in custody. So he's saying that he's a man of good reason and disposition, but really, he's lost. He doesn't know what to do. He's a bit confused. He's not clear what he should do. He's not showing good reasons. Now, let's look at verses 23 to 27, in the 3 minutes that we have left, how Festus is publicly presents the case to King Agrippa. So the next day, Agrippa and Bernice came with a great pomp, right? Cheer, enter the auditorium with the commanders and prominent men of the city. When Festus gave the command, Paul was brought in. Just that scene, picture that scene. The King Agrippa with his sister come in, and there's pomp, there's all this. Then comes the man, who? Paul, in chains. Simple man, right? Humble man of God. Now, the contrast there, can you picture that? Isn't that how God works things out? He puts you, all these men who have power, and then really, here's the man who will, God chooses, in totally opposite contrast to a man who has just political power. And it reminded me of Luther when he is in the Diet of Worms in 1521. He was called before the Holy Roman Emperor, Charles V, and to make him recant of his beliefs. He comes in and all these people are ready to judge him. I mean, that's pretty scary. Same thing's happening here. Paul, there are a lot of people here. It's just public. So here is Paul walking in chains. Simple man, simple clothing. And what happens? Then Festus said, gives him a little background. King Agrippa, an old man present with us, you see this man about whom the whole Jewish community has appealed to me, both in Jerusalem and here, shouting he should not live any longer. Is he exaggerating a bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, he is. He's exaggerating. He says, all the Jews want to kill him. Not true. There are specific Jews who want to kill him. Verse 25, now I realized that he had not done anything deserving death, but when he himself appealed to the emperor, I decided to send him. Now again, he reasserts that his belief that Paul is not guilty of anything deserving death. Verses 26 and 27, notice what he says also, I have nothing definite to write to my Lord about him, to Caesar. Therefore, I have brought him before all of you, especially before you, King Agrippa, so that after this examination is over, I may have something to write. For he seems unreasonable to me to send a prisoner and not to indicate the charges against him. So he presents him, right? And he presents him as a man that, first of all, he's marked by death by all Jewish people, which is not true. He does say that he's a man now found guilty of anything deserving death. He was right about that. He's a man that's presented to be heard and judged, according to verse 26 and 27, which is correct. But again, Festus shows himself as a very incompetent ruler. He does not know how to judge the matters, and he's calling on Agrippa to listen to him, to Paul, so that he can give him his opinion. Why? He needs to send that report back to Rome. He can't just send them. He has to write up the charges and send it to Rome. So he wants some help here. What does he write in there? He can't just write, oh, there are no charges. That's foolish. So he needs help. And so now he's asking King Agrippa to do this. And the stage is set for Paul's defense. Paul will speak in chapter 26 and give a really good presentation of his own testimony and presentation of the gospel. And that's for next time. But let me finish with this quote about Paul in this context. The narrator's characterizations of the Roman governors contributes to a portrait of Paul as one caught in a web of self-interested maneuvers by people who vie for support within the political jungle. However, Paul is not just a helpless victim. As opportunity comes, he continues to bear witness to his Lord. Although Paul continues to be denied justice and freedom, the saving purpose of God still has use for this resourceful and faithful prisoner. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that the case that's happening? That is the case. Let's pray.